Right, the said indicates is a continuation of last week's Sedra. So with the end of 2 year period, Paro had a dream, Vihine Omer Alayor, and he was standing by the water. Now, the commentaries point out that there is a conjunction, the Vav of Vayehi, and it was, and somehow is related to the previous chapter, where it says in the last verse, in 41:23, it says, V'lezachar sar hamashkim es Yosef v'yishkochehu, that the sar hamashkim, the prince of the butlers, Yosef had interpreted his dream properly, so he did not remember Yosef, and he forgot him. And this was, we know, a punishment, because Yosef put too much trust into the sar hamashkim. So for 2 more years, why did he put too much trust? Because when he spoke to the sar hamashkim, when he spoke to the steward, to the butler, and he told him the good news that he will be he will be returned to his position, so Yosef said, but please remember me, the Shleshis Yomim, in verse 14. It said in chapter 40, verse 14, he says, Ki im zechartani itcho, remember me, kasher yitavloch, when you will be shown a blessing, and do with me kindness, and remember me to Pharaoh, the Hitzisani, and bring me out from this house. Now the Chazal said that he put too much emphasis on the sar hamashkim redeeming him. Why? Because the language that he used twice, he says, remember me, and the hiskartani, and you should remember me, the heitzesani, and take me out. Somehow he omits God's name, and he seems to place too much faith in the sar hamashkim. Because of that, he was punished, that he had to sit in the prison for 2 more years. Now some say, what was the idea of 2 years? Wasn't it proper for him to intercede? That's why God made this whole idea of the dream, was for Yosef to benefit. So they say yes, but he didn't have to say twice the Im Zechartani. That means if he realized and he felt that indeed this was God's plan and it wasn't his own initiative and his own wisdom, then he of course would be obligated to tell the sar hamashkim, please remember me, because that's the natural fashion. But to say twice the zechartani, he should not have done that. Since he said the second time zechartani, showed that he put his total concentration and his total hope of the future into this event that happened, as if he would be the one bringing about his own freedom. Now, therefore, we find the Medrash saying, the Chazal say, first they note that L'chore, they say there are two separate instances, two separate ideas. The end of 2 years is one thing, and Paro, Cholem, Paro having a dream is a second thing. But it doesn't say, it puts it all in one sentence, and then if you look at the Hebrew, it says, Vehimi Kech Nasayim Yamin, it was the end of 2 years, Ufaro Cholem, and Pharaoh had a dream, as if there was a relationship of the 2 years to the dream. Because when you have two phrases and you use the Vav, so in somehow it connects and it relates one phrase to the other. So the Beis HaLevi, that's the original Brisker Rav, the first one of the Soloveitchik dynasty. So the Beis HaLevi, he explained it in the following fashion. He says that there is always a Siba, he says, a reason, the basic reason, and the Mesuvav means the result of this reason. That means there is a hidden cause, and the hidden cause brings about certain ideas and certain reactions. What are the ideas? For example, if a person goes ahead and he invests a lot of money, or invests money and he becomes wealthy from this money. So the natural reaction of the person is that why did he become wealthy? He became wealthy because he made a very wise investment. That's how we all react. But according to the truth, it's a big mistake, because it wasn't the investment that brought about the wealth. It was ordained, Rosh Hashanah, who will be rich, who will be poor. It was ordained in heaven that he should have wealth during this year. After it was ordained by God that he should be wealthy, they had to provide opportunities in this world for that to be implemented, for the plan to be implemented. So he was given the wisdom and the opportunity to make this investment, and therefore the Siba that Hashem wanted him to become wealthy, that in a sense contributed that there became a Mesubav that he went ahead and he invaded investment. So the thing was the same by Yosef and Paro. It says, Vahim Miketz Shnasayim Yomim Uparo Cholein. It was the end of 2 years. Now Yosef's punishment of the 2 years extra had passed. So now he has to get out of prison. How is he going to get out of prison? Paro Cholein, Paro was told to have a dream. Since Paro was told to have a dream, then this will bring about Yosef's redemption from prison. And that's what the Medrash seems to say. There's a Medrash on the Pasuk on Ketz Son Lechoshech, a passage in Iyot, which says that God has given like a Ketz, a end, a definite time for darkness. So it says the Medrash that the Ketz Son Lechoshech means the time that was ordained that Yosef should be in prison. That's what the Medrash means. That's what the passage means. And when the time came, the Medrash continues, Kivin Shehigia Ketz, when the 2 years came to an end, Uparo Cholein, Paro had his dream. But if people would say, why did Yosef get out of prison? So obviously we'll say Yosef got out of prison because Paro had his dream. Paro had his dream, and he needed someone, so they took Yosef out of prison. But it wasn't that way. The truth, Yosef had to get out of prison. So then Paro had his dream. The Chofetz Chaim, in the same vein, always brought a mashal. He brought a very interesting mashal. He says that there was the first time a person came to a train station. So he saw a train man standing there like, and he was blowing the whistle. The first time blowing the whistle means the train's coming. The second time he was standing on the platform. Blowing the whistle means get ready, the train is going to leave. The third time blowing the whistle is get ready, blow, and the train goes off. So he thought, this person who's conducting the whole train, I mean, this person is a very wise individual. Probably knows everything because everybody listens to him and the train moves according to whatever he decries, whatever he says. So he went over to him and he started asking him questions about the railroad, how it works and so on. He says, listen, he says, you can't ask me that. He says, you have to go and ask my boss. Your boss, you're the one that's controlling the whole railroad. You're the one that's blowing the thing and the train comes, the train stops, they all listen to you. So he says, no, he says, he laughed, he says, I'm only a very minor functionary here, he says. I take my lessons, or I take my command from the man above. He's the one who tells me. So the Chofetz Chaim says, but when a person the first time looks at it, he always thinks that this fellow blowing the whistle is the ganze balabas, but actually he's nothing. He's a mere functionary that is appointed to do this minor job, but the plans and the system and the scheme are really developed in the inner chambers amongst the computers. They decide when the train moves and what time and how it'll go. He just blows the whistle. But the child seeing it the first time would think, oh, this whistleblower, he's really the whole man in control. So the Chofetz Chaim said, the same mashal. And then another mashal, he gave over the name, it says, the Chazal say in the generation that Ben David will come, when Mashiach will come in that generation, the Pnei Ador Kepnei Akelev, the leaders of the door of the generation will be Kepnei Akelev, like the leaders, like a dog. What does this mean, like a dog? So he says, there are different mashalim that are given. You've heard that expression about the dog looking back to see where the master, and then he goes. But he says a different idea. When somebody throws a stone at the dog, so the dog will go ahead and he'll jump on the stone like and start pawing at the stone as this, the stone is the one that caused him this pain. Why? Because the stone hit him. He doesn't realize really that there was someone who threw the stone on the dog. The stone can't move and the stone had no intention to hit the dog. So he says, but they misunderstand the Siba and the Mesuba. The stone hitting the dog was just a result of the fact that somebody threw the stone. So he says, this is the important lesson. Vahimi Keshna Sayim Yamin, we have to look at that way. And when something happens here, it's not that this is the place where it happened, but indeed, it happened up there. This is just the way that it is brought about. Now, speaking about Yosef, going back to the idea that he was 2 years, how could we condemn him for that? I mean, one would think that just because he asked, like we said many times, this is the way Hashem wanted him to be redeemed. So what does it show that he said? What did he say so terribly? He said, remember me, please remember me. So because of that, to get a punishment of 2 more years in the Beis HaSoah, so one would think that Yosef was lacking in faith and betochen in Hashem. So there's a medrash to the contrary. It would seem to be the medrash is self-contradictory. It says, Ashrei HaGeber, blessed is the person, Asher Som Bashem Miftacho, who puts his faith into God. In Tehillim, this is the passage in Tehillim. So it says, Ze Yosef, this refers to Yosef. V'lo pona el rohavim, and he does not turn to idols. So it says, it continues, because he said, the Messiah Mashkim, he said to the butler, remember me and remember me twice, so he received 2 more years. So what does this medrash seem to be contradicting itself? And first it says, Ashrei HaGever, blessed is the person, and it gives you the prototype as being Yosef. Then it says, and this person who didn't turn to what? To false vanities for salvation. And again it says that Yosef was punished. Which way does it mean? So again, the Beis Halevi Express says we understand that a person has to do, because the passage is, Uverachticha b'chol asher ta'aseh. All right? And a person has to do, but it really depends on the individual as to how much that he has to do. For example, there's a Talmudic passage where it says that Ve'osafta d'ganecha, the passage of Kriyishma, which we say, that you gather together your grain, Ve'osafta d'ganecha, v'siroshcha, v'yitzarecha, you go out in your fields and you'll plow and you'll gather together, be the blessing of God if you listen to his mitzvah. But then, the Gemara in Brachos brings down a contrary idea, where it says that you don't have to do anything, others will stand and provide for you. So here it seems, one says that you have to do and you'll be blessed, and the other one provide for you. So it says, well, it depends. One who is osin mitzvah shomotin, who is totally committed to do the wishes of God, he doesn't have to do anything. The omdu acherim, the others will provide for him. Ein osin mitzvah shomotin, he doesn't do the wishes of God, that person has to plow. So they ask the question, but the Torah, this is going in Kriyishma. And in Kriyishma it says, V'hoya im shamoa tishmeyu el mitzvosai. If you keep my mitzvot, you will be blessed. Ve'asafta digonecha. You will gather to. So it's speaking about a person who observed mitzvot. There are levels. And the Gemara says, Rishim ben Yechoi was one level. There are levels of people, no matter how strong their belief is in Hashem. And the one who has this definite, strong belief in Hashem, it's not necessary for him to do one iota. But then the Talmud says, and this is speaking of the time of the Tanoim of the Talmud, it says many tried that, but they were not successful. Because it seems that they didn't have that degree of emunah and betochen. They did have to have hishtadlut. And we're not speaking about our generation, you understand? We're speaking about the generation of the Talmud. Yosef, here is called trusting God, here he's called lacking. The answer is, for anyone else, not in the level of Yosef, it wouldn't be called lacking. The fact that he asked him, please go ahead and remember me. But Yosef had within him such great emunah that by Yosef it was called lacking. That means he should have realized when maybe even the language that he said was correct, but it was understood, God who reads beneath the word, understood that in his language of asking the person please, it's like he was conveying that this is his hope and he's the one. In fact, I would say the one word that he says, remember me twice, and then he says, when you remember me, let me just quote in the pasuk. Besides saying that, remember me twice, he says, Vehotse sani, and bring me out. If you look at the language of the pasuk, he says, remember me when you will be remembered with kindness, and do kindness with me. Remember me before Pharaoh, and take me out of this house. So even if he would say, remember me, so we'll say, fine, he's supposed to do that. But the emphasis, Vehetze Sani, he added, and you take me out. This take me out, you could say, shows that indeed he's thinking that it's the Sarah Mashkim who is going to take him out, and not Hashem. So he learned his lesson in the 2 years. In fact, later, a little bit later, when it says that when Paro called Yosef, in verse 14, it says Paro sent, and he called Yosef, and he came to Paro, right? So now, when he speaks to Pharaoh, and Pharaoh, after he tells him the dream, what does Yosef tell him? Pharaoh should see a wise person and place him in what? An Eretz Mitzrayim. So how could Yosef say that? How could Yosef say that Pharaoh should place him in Eretz Mitzrayim? Isn't he going overboard again? He says, God is the one. I don't have anything to do with it. God is the one. And then he like tells Pharaoh, take a wise person, meaning himself, alluding to it, and place him in Eretz Mitzrayim. Again, what are you sticking out your neck? If you have B'tochen B'Hashem, so Hashem will say to Paro, and Paro will say to you, just like you, like he does, Paro, since you knew this, there's nobody as wise as you. Why did you have to go ahead and tell him that? Isn't that the same thing that you said previously, in the previous Sedra, why he was punished for 2 years? Because you said, take me out. So here you're also going too far on your own initiative. So Rav Dessler said a very good thought. He said that the problem with Yosef was not the fact that he did something, not the fact that he said, remember me, but the fact, like we're saying, that he put too much consideration and too much hope into saying, remember me. There's nothing wrong with saying, remember me, if you realize it's God that's going to do it. But if you go ahead and you put too much hope in the remembering me, then it shows that you question God's bringing about the miracle. That's why he said, like I was saying, the Heitzei Sani, that shows indeed the remembering means remember me and take me out. That's not God's going to take me out. That extra Heitzei Sani, take me out of here, that could have been that. But here there was already no problem because Yosef learned his lesson already. So he, because immediately when he was called to Pharaoh, what was his first response? He said, I can't answer dreams. Bilah die. It's beyond me. God will answer the dream. So he didn't say, I'm going to answer your dream, and that way he'll win Pharaoh's favor. But he totally said that it's in God's hands. So Rav Dessler said by this point, he had already learned the lesson very well. Once he learned the lesson that it's totally in God's hands, then he already could go a step further and say, you know, with his own initiative, insinuating or intimating that I would be the right one to appoint. And there's nothing wrong with that because he really knows already and has proven that it's really God, but I have to try to make a certain hishtadlut. So this is the way Rav Dessler explains this. Later, he says, there is no longer any condemnation and the hishtadlus that he made later would be really the proper hishtadlus. Right? Now, getting back to the dream, what were these dreams? These dreams were such that Pharaoh, like Hirsch explains the uniqueness of Pharaoh's dreams, that Pharaoh dreamt, if we look at the cows, just to review this, we've spoken about this in the past, Pharaoh, in verse 2, or verse 1, is dreaming that v'hine omed al hayor, that he's standing on the river. Now, you really don't stand on a river, but the idea of omed al hayor means you don't stand on a river, but it means that his mind is really functioning towards the river. When Hashem showed him this dream, he showed him omed al hayor. Now, when Pharaoh relates this dream, he says, I'm standing on the... Pharaoh's not going to go ahead and say, I'm standing on the river. He's right. There were a lot of religions based on people standing and walking on water. But Pharaoh did not say that. I mean, he didn't accept such a miracle. This wasn't the question. He said, so when Pharaoh wants to relate it, he figured this is a foolishness. I'm standing on the river. You know, you have it, every dream that we have has a lot of chalemus in it. What do we say in a dream? In a dream, we say a person only dreams about what he thinks about in the days, you know. So, but then there's a little bar, there's a little stubble that's mixed in it. A lot of times when we dream something, you know, like one person once came and he said, I had terrible dreams all night, I was kept awake. So he says, what were the dreams? He said, I was dreaming about God, all kind of terrible things. So the person said, well, you probably think of God during the day. He says, look, I haven't thought about God during the day for 30 years. Where does the dream come from? So sometimes the dream be totally to what you go through the day, but usually it has something to do with your daily affairs. So he says, I'm standing on the lake. So he realized this can't be. So what does he mean? So he changes it in verse 17. He says, I'm standing by the Svasayor, by the shore. Made a little change. So God told him standing on the lake. He meant standing on the lake, because on the lake means that your entire concentration is about the lake. So that means if you're standing by the lake, you're concerned with the Nile. The Nile was the life of Egypt. This is the lifeline of Egypt. So he, as the king, is concerned with the lifeline of Egypt, and that's truly so. Then, but when he says that he's standing on the seashore, so it doesn't mention anything about on the sea, on the lake, so that already changes the whole idea. Then in the next sentence it says, there came out cows, Reis mare vidakos bosor. And they stood, and if you notice in sentence 2, it says, there came out of the river 7 cows, which were well favored and healthy of flesh. They were grazing in the meadow. And then the other 7 cows stood right next to them. If you notice the end of verse 3, the 7 cows that were ill favored and lean flesh, they stood next to the cows on the side of the river. Now, what is the idea by standing next to the cows? Now, how does he tell about this later? We'll take a look later in verse 19, right? It says, Eilis acharehem. If you keep one hand here and there, it says by 18, it says, and from there came up 7 cows, Brias Bosa V'yafas Toar, healthy of flesh and beautiful in form. Now, if you note here in sentence 2, it doesn't say healthy in flesh and beautiful in form. It says yafas mare, beautiful in appearance, and healthy in flesh. Now there's a difference we'll see from yafas mare and yafas toar. Pharaoh changed something there also. Then when you get to 19, there's a phrase missing. 19, he says, 7 more cows came, and they were very ill-favored, lacking flesh. I never saw in the whole land of Egypt such cows so ugly. And they ate up the other cows. Now he omitted the fact that they stood next to the fat cows. He says, there came up 7 cows. I never saw such terrible cows. And then in the next sentence 20, it says, they ate up the good cows. But when Pharaoh had the dream in verse 3, it says, Vatamodna. They stood next to the cows, al Svasayor, by the side of the water. And there's a big difference, because, like Hirsch points out, the dream said that the bad cows were not cannibals by nature. That means that hunger wouldn't make them eat up the other cows if they had something else to eat. So first, they didn't come up and immediately eat up the other cows. They first stood, al Svasayor, by the seashore, or by the water. And if they would have had enough fodder to eat, they wouldn't have gone ahead and eaten up the good cows. The only reason they ate up the healthy cows was because they didn't have enough to eat. Pharaoh omitted that point. Like he said, they came out of the water and they devoured the good cows. But in his dream, there was one point missing. Missing was the fact that they first stood there for a period of time. If they would have been provided for when they were standing there, the lean years, they would have never eaten up the good years. So that's also a very important point. So there are two distinctions that he's seen from the dream and from what Pharaoh told him. The third thing was, it depends, when you speak about good, for example, let me just quote him. In the dream, the cows were yefos marer brias boser, good to look at and healthy of flesh. Now, they describe, both, he says, go together and describe them with reference to their value to men. Cows were good to look at and they were healthy cows. When Pharaoh tells about them, he says they were yefos toar, meaning beautifully formed animals. All right? So he says, to quote Hirsch, he says, no butcher looks at beauty of form. He leaves that to the painters and to the artists and to the poets. So when he looks at a healthy cow and good to look at, it means like a solid, prime cow. Beauty of form, this aesthetics of this, that's for the poet, he says, not for the butcher. So the fact, when Pharaoh describes them, he speaks about their form, not the way they looked at. There's a difference. The dream was mare, the way you saw it.
Torah means the way they were formed. He's not a sculpture. So Pharaoh changed it to the way they were formed. So he says, now you can't blame all the Chartumei Mitzrayim. What did they tell him? You'll have seven daughters in seven provinces, or the seven daughters will die, and so on. So this is true. It was a personal dream because he was standing al Svasa Yor, not on the Yor. The idea of form would depict that it's dealing with human beings more so than others. The idea of not standing thereby, but immediately being devoured, also shows a different event than really what happened. But Yosef, by the divine wisdom, understood that God gave him the wisdom to see the true dream. And from the true dream, he understood how to go ahead and to interpret the dream. And therefore, he said very clearly, the reason why they devoured the others were because they didn't have what to eat. But if we'll save from the seven full years and we'll ration the grain, then there won't be any problem. Then the seven lean years, the cows will have what to eat, so they won't have to devour and destroy the seven full years. So from his understanding, this is the way Hirsch goes through the dreams and the difference of opinion and the difference of expression. So from his understanding of the dream, there was no question that he could answer that. If we just read the dream, we wouldn't understand why the Chartumim couldn't see it, and what was so great of Yosef seeing it, and what does he mean that God will give me the wisdom? There are a lot of interpretations. Perhaps if we gave this to us, maybe we would come up with such an interpretation. But when you have the repeating of the dream, and you see the differences, the nuances that are apparent in the repeating of the dream, so then you see the wisdom of Yosef, meaning the wisdom that God had given into Yosef. So it's very important for the Torah to repeat it. The fact that he does repeat it that way shows us this wisdom. So now, what does he tell Paro? This also shows you the wisdom that he says. First he says, let's take a look at 33, and I want to give you Hirsch's interpretation next few passages. He says, Ve'ato, and now, Yorei Faro, let Faro see, Ish Navon V'chacham, a very wise person, Vaishiseyu al Eretz Mitzrayim, and set him over the land. Now, Hirsch points out, there are two words perhaps that would be proper here. One is Vaishiseyu, appoint him over the land. Another word is Hifkid. Hifkid is also an appointment. So he says, why? And that's the normal word, Pakad. Why does he use Shiseyu? So he says, in Hifkid, the one, if you use Hifkid, the one who is appointed is more dependent and subordinate. Meaning, I'm appointing you to do this. So you really have to answer, to a degree, you have to answer back to the king. Vaishiseyu is like he spread him out. He gives him a certain, his own wings, a certain autonomy. So he wanted this person, in a sense, to have dictatorial powers. And the fact, if he would have these powers, then it would be a lot stronger. That means the times, he said, would become so hard, and the land would lose the means of help granted by the years of plenty, as we'll see later. So you have to have a person who the people know that there is no recourse from whatever he commands, meaning you could even go to the king. There's an absolute separation, we'll say, of governments, different in different wings of the government. So he wondered, and Pharaoh understood that Yosef has to have, when it comes to this commerce, total not being, because as long as people really even feel that they could have a form of appeal over this person's authority, he can't have absolute authority. But if they know that there is just no appeal over the authority, so that gives him more authority, and there's more obedience to whatever he decrees. And it was necessary to have, in a situation like this, absolute authority. Then he says, and also, in 34, if you notice, the next sentence, Yasef Faro v'yafkeit pekidim. Here he uses the expression, appoint officers. Why? Because he's telling him to appoint officers on the land, taxpayers. These people, all they can do are collect taxes. Now, it's also interesting that who does he want the taxes has nothing to do with Yosef. Yosef says, you, Pharaoh, you appoint tax men. The people shouldn't look at Yosef as the bad tax man, and he has nothing to do with the taxes. So that's one aspect. So if you say if everybody's going to get taxes, right? I mean, you're going to have tax people, who are going to tax the people. What is this wise individual supposed to do? So in 35, he tells you what the wise individual is supposed to do. It says, he should gather together all the excess food, and he should gather together in a repository in each individual city. Meaning that they are going to, people are going to know about the hunger, they're going to pay a tax. Knowing that there's a hunger, there be food that will be saved. But the food that will be saved should not be used in commerce. That means that people, individuals, should not have the right to export that food or even to sell it to another city. But that food should remain under the crown, meaning the king will pay them for it. The crown will pay them for it, which he did. It will be stored, and it should be stored, like he says, Ochel Be'orim Vishomoru. Granaries in the cities should be stored. What is the significance of this? So he points out, Hirsch, that the benevolent purpose of this control, which was very stringent, but it should be apparent to everybody why he's doing it. It's not like the king was trying to amass wealth, but it should be apparent to everybody. And to prevent resentment, the grain bought by the crown should not be stored in central granaries, but in every city would have its armory, kept under seal of the state in the cities themselves where it had been bought up. And so there, the population, it would always be, once the hunger comes, it'll be visible before their eyes that there's plenty food, and that would be an insurance against the future lack of food. So first it would help in the way that they'll be using it sparsely during the year, because they'll know where the food is going. It's going for their own future, and they won't become frantic in the future. Now, it's interesting. I think in our day, we could appreciate this. We could appreciate so much so that you have a world, right, where oil is stockpiled. There is no shortage of oil. Americans have been screaming all along, there's no shortage of oil. There was no reason for it to jump up to 40-some dollars. And surely now, and to have prices of this nature. So the idea is, why shouldn't they? Because there's plenty of oil stored away. But you see that even with oil stored away, you can't stop profiteering in the time when there's a propaganda that can be built up that there is a shortage. So we can appreciate this. You need a nishnavon v'chacham to be able to implement it and to also see to make it effective. And this would be the primary relationship. Actually, what do they have? An energy. America, didn't they always appoint like a minister of energy? They tried it one time. Well, in a sense, you could liken this to a minister of energy who has absolute power. But that was the chacham. That was the wisdom that Yosef possessed at that time. So Pharaoh went ahead and he appointed him. He only had one more point to mention. Later he says to Yosef, well, we know that Yosef married, he said Yosef would have to have a wife. Why would he have to have a wife? So he gave him a name, Tzofnas Paneach, it says in verse 45. And he felt that, let me quote Hirsch again. He says, Yosef would make an example of simple living in his house and family life. It would be good for him to be a family man. In fact, we find this in the Shulchan Aruch, and it says when you take a person to daven for Yomim Neroim, one of the primary considerations should be that he should have a wife and a family. In that way, when he pleads for God, his tears will be more sincere and genuine. So Pharaoh meant that also. And who did he appoint? So we say that, who did Yosef marry finally? So we said in this verse that he married Bas Potipharah Kohen On. Who was this Bas Potipharah? So the Chazal tell us, the Daskenim brings down the opinion that this was a descendant of Yaakov. She was the daughter of Dinah, who was born from the union with Shechem, and Yaakov Avinu, before they sent her away, whatever, why, they, that's a different question, they wrote a little kameya, meaning a little seal they put around a necklace. And it said there, the daughter of Dinah. And Potiphar adopted her, and that's why she was called Bas Potipharah. Now, when Yosef went through Egypt, so it said all the women went out to look at him because of his beauty, and everyone like threw something at him. So she didn't have what to throw, so she took off this necklace and threw the necklace. And Yosef saw what was written in the necklace, so he realized that she was a descendant of that family, and therefore he married her, which is a very beautiful medrash brought down by the Das Kenin. But again, so he married her, and then we know, now the other point in chapter 42 was when the brothers came down to Yosef. So immediately he accuses them with Meraglim Atem, that you are what? Spies. And then he said that there's one way that he will know. I will just say one more thought. They bring down an interesting interpretation that Yosef says, I will know if you'll bring your brother Binyamin to here. In chapter 43, just take a look for a moment at the language of the text. In 43:29, it says there that Vayisa Einov, he lifted up his eyes, Vayarez Binyamin Ochiv Benimo, and he saw Binyamin his Vayomer, and he said to them, is this the small brother that you spoke to me? Vayomer, and he said to Binyamin, Elakim Yochnechovni, let God bless you. So again, they ask the question here, it's brought down from the Netziv. He asks them a question. Is this your small brother that you spoke about? And he didn't wait for an answer. So they should have gone ahead and they should have answered him, indeed, this is the small brother. But he says, when you think back about it, they were pleading that we can't bring Binyamin. Why? Because Yaakov has one young child.